You're listening to Vatican Radio. The Order of Preachers, or Dominicans as its members are known, is opening its general chapter on Monday in the city of Trogir on Croatia's Adriatic coast. Friars from across the world are gathering for the assembly, which is expected to conclude on August the 8th, the feast day of St. Dominic. Unusually, no superiors, apart from the Master General, will be present, but rather delegates elected by the different provinces and charged with defining the direction of the order over the coming years. The friars themselves describe this system of self-government as a unique evangelical democracy, which has been in place for almost 800 years. To find out more, I went over to the ancient Dominican convent at Santa Sabina here in Rome to meet with Irish Father Vivian Boland, vicar or principal assistant to the Master General.
The democracy, first of all, we have a chapter every 3 years. We elect a master every 9 years, so there are two chapters in between, elective chapters. About 60 to 70 of the brothers come to each chapter, except for an elective chapter when we have about 120. The smaller chapters, one is of provincials, superiors from around the world, and the other is of delegates, not superiors, but brothers elected by chapters of the order. So the chapter that's coming up in Croatia is a chapter of what we call definitors or delegates. They're not superiors in the order. They're ordinary members of the order, if you like, and have been elected by the provincial chapters.
This is unique, perhaps. Is it within the church?
I think our particular form of it is ours, but there are other orders from the same period, from the Middle Ages, who would have chapter forms of government. In other words, the communities are governed by the members of the community themselves rather than by an abbot. And it is, I mean, it's true that the Dominicans are one of the oldest ongoing democratic organizations in the world, I would say, not just in the church. Our legislation has to be approved by three chapters, for example, before it's definitive. So it means that a substantial number of members of the order have had a chance to reflect on that and make decisions about it. Not just superiors, but also delegates from different parts of the order. So over the centuries, I think it begins with St. Dominic, whose genius was in government, really. And it begins with him and the primitive constitutions. And then they've been refined through practice over the centuries. But it is, I think, a very remarkable system of government, self-government.
Just give us a few figures about the numbers of Dominicans around the world today, which countries you're predominantly based in.
There are just under 6,000 friars in the world. About 1,000 of them are in formation, so they're younger members of the order, which is very encouraging. There are strong provinces and weak provinces in every part of the world. The province of Colombia, for example, in South America is very strong. The province of Poland, the American provinces are generally strong. Vietnam, Philippines, Nigeria. Lots of vocations in some parts of the world. Fewer vocations in Western Europe and North America. But in some parts of those areas too, a significant increase in recent years in the number of vocations.
What do you see then as the most significant challenges that you'll be addressing during this general chapter?
Well, to go back to your first question about the Dominicans as an evangelical democracy, the other side of our mission is evangelization. When Pope Honorius III approved the order in 1216, so we're coming up to celebrating the 8th centenary of the order, he approved it as an order of preachers for evangelization. So that's one of the priorities for this chapter, as it is a priority for the Church at the moment, to think about our celebration of this jubilee and the renewal of our mission of evangelization. Because the mendicant orders began really in a moment in which the church needed a new evangelization. So we feel quite at home with thinking about new evangelization. What does it mean? What challenges does it present to us about presenting the gospel in fresh ways, engaging with the questions, the many questions that there are in the world about the gospel and the church and so on. So that's the big challenge, and that will be the main theme of this chapter. will be preparing for the celebration of our Jubilee in 2016, not just as a historical celebration of great things in the past, but as a way of trying to renew our mission for the church today.
Can you give us any ideas, perhaps, as you're looking ahead, as you say, to this important celebration, any ideas or any examples of the ways in which perhaps Dominicans are translating that message of new evangelization into contemporary culture?
I mean, the Dominicans have always, the order of preachers, studying the Word in order to bring the Word to the world and to bring the world to the Word, the preacher's task. So individuals begin to come to mind, particular communities I've met as I've travelled around the order, who are engaging with the culture, engaging with philosophy, with art, with music. This has always been a part of the Dominican charism. And there are many brothers and many communities, many sisters as well in the order, who are continuing that work. It would be just different ways, interreligious dialogue, working with migrants, trying to identify how to do pastoral work in the great city centres, for example, the great modern city centres. So there are themes like that that come through, which are modern questions in one way. On the other hand, the resources we have are traditional, you could say, our community life, our study, our willingness to engage with the questions of people, with the questions that are put to the church and to the gospel, and to think and to talk with people about these.
Let's look at Croatia, where you'll be holding this general chapter. The country of Croatia has particularly strong ties, doesn't it, with the Dominicans?
Yes, actually, at the beginning there was a general chapter every year, and the general chapter of 1221, which was the year in which St. Dominic died, so the last chapter he attended, sent Paul of Dalmatia to establish the order in Croatia and Hungary. So 4 years later, the priory in Dubrovnik was founded, 1225, same year that the Dominicans arrived in Ireland, actually. So, and the priory of Dubrovnik, beautiful priory, medieval priory, is one of three in Europe that have been continuously inhabited by the Dominicans since the 13th century. The others are Vienna and Krakow. So the Dominicans became established in Croatia, Dalmatia, as it was called then. It was part of the province of Hungary. I think there were about 60 communities in that region, which was it's present-day Serbia, Croatia, Montenegro, Albania, Slovenia. At one point then, it was divided into three, province of Croatia, congregation of Dubrovnik, and the province of Hungary in the north. So the vicissitudes of history, as you know, that region has had a very colourful and dramatic history. The province was able to re-establish itself after, just in the 1960s, after the Second Vatican Council, the present form of the province in Croatia was fixed. And there are now about 11 communities there. They have a mission in Slovenia, and they also have chaplaincies in France and Germany looking after Croatian people in those countries.
Of course, the recent history of the Balkans has been a very difficult time, hasn't it, for the Catholic Church there? We think of the terrible upheavals of the war. Mm. How has that affected community life there?
At one time it meant that quite a number of Croatian Dominicans, as from the other Eastern European countries, were working in the West. Some of them would have come to the West to work in the institutions of the order in Western Europe.
Do you see, or do they see, reconciliation perhaps in that very troubled region as part of the mission of the Dominicans today?
Yes, they would. There'd be different points at which they're involved in interreligious dialogue. The sisters, for example, in Montenegro, see their devotion to Blessed Ozana of Kotor, who's an unusual figure, a medieval anchorite, a bit like Julian of Norwich, but a Dominican. And the devotion which has gathered around her has also taken on this character of it being a place and a point where ecumenism is worked at, and reconciliation between the different religious traditions is part of the concern.
My thanks there to Dominican Father Vivian Boland.